My friends, words cannot describe the horrors and ordeals the political prisoners endure in Castro's dungeons. I will now try to tell you what happened before, during, and after the Bay of Pigs fiasco. On the night of April the 14th, we saw flames shooting high into the skies over downtown Havana. Later on that same night, we received news from the prison grapevine that the El Encanto, a famous department store in Havana, had been burned to the ground. Also that there were many acts of sabotage in the city. That night we could hear sirens and fire engines racing in the streets. The next morning around 6:30, we heard bombs exploding in the distance, and we knew something was taking place, as the guards were milling around on the roof and running in the patio. We knew through the grapevine that planes were bombing Havana and that the long-awaited invasion was taking place. They never let us out for breakfast or lunch. We were helpless and desperately trying to get news. That afternoon around 5 o'clock, we received news that the invasion was starting as the bombs and sabotaging was continuing. The next morning, the 16th, was quiet, but the guards were heavily armed. That afternoon, they brought in 7 prisoners to our cell block. Amongst them was the former comandante, Humberto Zorri Morin, who had written the laws of the revolution but had defected. This man had been the head of the military tribunals and had sent many men to their deaths. This man and the rest with him were destined to be executed in a few days. The morning of the 17th, to our surprise, the patio was filling up with prisoners. By 8 o'clock, there were so many of them that the patio was jammed to capacity. Women, children, and old folks. I never saw such a sight in all my life. They were wailing, crying, and carrying on so. The guards were milling around on the roof. There were about 50 of them. They were very excited, and we could hear them saying the Americans had invaded Cuba. You must recall that the castle had a moat around it. We looked out and saw that the moat was also filled with women, children, and men. The whole place was in an uproar. It started to rain, and the poor people outside, we really couldn't help them. They were milling around, and there was bedlam all that day. Around 7 o'clock that night, an announcement was made that all women and children were to be moved to the outside of the prison compound. About a week later, these prisoners were transferred to Castilla del Principe. That following morning, around 3 o'clock, the guards stormed into every cell block, and we were all herded outside at bayonet point and made to stand at attention, stark naked. You can just imagine that patio. It was packed with terrified men, some too weak to stand, others defiant, some fell. We were out there for 18 hours. The guards on the roof were very nervous. They had mounted at least 20 50 caliber machine guns, which were trained on us in the patio. An announcement was made by the chief of the prison that if the invasion was a success, he would shoot us all. You can just imagine what happened then amongst the prisoners. Suddenly, some prisoners started to sing the Marine Corps hymn. This enraged the chief of the prison. He said on the loudspeaker if the singing didn't stop, he would kill us there and then. You could hear the women and children screaming from outside the walls. Some of the men started to scream. Some started shouting, others crying, while others wanted to try and storm the roof. All hell was breaking loose. While this was happening, another group started to sing the Cuban national anthem. And the chief of the prison actually climbed on the roof and cocked one of the machine guns. At that instant, 2 guards ran to the chief, talked to him, and calmed him down. Another guard pleaded over the loudspeaker for us to stop singing, as they did not want us to start a riot, and also they didn't want to kill us. With this, the prisoners quieted down. The guard then said he had to hold us out in the patio as they were going to search the cell blocks. They were looking for arms that we were supposed to have. It started to rain, and for us it was the longest 18 hours of our lives. It was a cold rain. God only knows how many men got sick that day. In the next 48 hours, 11 men died in La Cabaña Fortress. There were no medicines for anyone. The people in the moat were worse off than we were, as there were no sanitation facilities. They had to sleep in the dirt, cold, and the rain. I could never describe here what was happening in the moat. After the ordeal in the patio, we were locked in for 31 days, only taken out to eat. There was a tight clamp of security placed on the prison, and on April the 17th, the firing squad started again. On the 21st, we received word that the invasion was a failure and that everything was lost. On the 23rd, Comandante Humberto Zorri Morin and the other six were executed. During the next 60 days, there were over 175 men executed in La Cabaña Fortress. I would like to describe a typical execution at La Cabaña. We will take the case of the American adventurer Major William Morgan. He had been arrested in the late 1960s, tried and executed in February of 1961. I got to know Morgan well. The night before he died, we had a long talk. He explained that although he had lost his American citizenship, he still was an American and could not continue with Fidel Castro when he found out Castro's plans, and he started to conspire against the communist government. He was anti-communist, a lover of freedom. He had been turned in by one of his most trusted lieutenants. Together with his men, he had started a front in the Escambray Mountains and was beginning to organize a large-scale uprising. Despite his loss of citizenship, he had been working closely with the U.S. Embassy. Whatever has been said of Morgan, he died for his being anti-communist, and he was truly an American to the end. His wife has been sentenced to 30 years. He left two children. God only knows what has become of them. They took Morgan from cell block number 14 at 1:30 in the morning. The reason for this was that Morgan was very well liked and the communists were afraid of him. They put him in the capillas, or the death cells, which are located beside the office to await his trial. He was tried at 2:30 the next afternoon, and at 10:30 that night was executed. The paredón, or execution wall, is right behind cell block number 14. We could not see the executions, but could hear the commands and everything that was said. William Morgan came back from his trial at 6 o'clock at night. We could see him as he entered the capillas. He turned and waved to everyone, but before he had returned, the lights were lit at the paredón. We could hear cars coming up the road and voices of women and children, plus the communist guards. This was to be a Roman holiday. The spectators were already beginning to arrive. Before William Morgan himself knew he was to die, the show was on the road. At 10:25, Morgan was taken from his cell, put into a jeep. We could hear in the awful stillness of the night as the jeep circled and came to a stop behind cell block number 14. Then the spectators started to jeer at him and calling him many foul names in Spanish. There was a command of attention, and I heard a voice that I recognize as the voice of Raul Castro. He tells Morgan to kneel and beg for his life. Morgan answers back that he kneels for no man and curses Raul Castro. Raul Castro, in a rage, orders two men from the firing squad to shoot Morgan in the right and left knee. Morgan is still cursing Raul Castro. He has fallen. Then he is shot in both shoulders. The crowd is jeering and laughing. The captain of the firing squad empties the full clip from his Thompson into Morgan's chest. Not satisfied, he then pumps 5 .45 slugs into the back of his head. William Morgan's body was given to his sister-in-law to be buried in the cemetery of Colon. His body was the last one to be given to the families of the executed, as there was such a scene at his burial, for he had many, many friends. The next morning, when the prisoners were in the yard for breakfast, they started to call the guards murderers, bandits, and monsters. It looked like a riot was in the making. We were locked up in our cells for a week. The prison grapevine is a strange thing. Everyone knew how Morgan died and were in a fighting mood. I will now talk about a boy of 19 years of age, Antonio Chao Flores. This boy had been with Morgan in the Escambray Mountains. He had returned to Havana after the death of Morgan. He had blonde hair and blue eyes and was known as the Americanito, or Little American. He had been arrested when wounded in a running gun fight with some militiamen and had killed two of them. He had been shot 18 times, taken to the military hospital where his right leg had been amputated above the knee. He came to La Cabaña Fortress with the blood still leaking through his bandages. In fact, when he came into number 14, myself and a few of the other men picked out pieces of lead that were still embedded in his wounds. Fortunately, he was young and strong and slowly recovered his strength. One day, while sitting on my bed, his name was called and he went to trial. By this time, Antonio had a pair of crutches. He hobbled out. That night at 10:30, the little American was dead. Let me tell you how he died. He was taken from the Capillas without his crutches and made to hop to the jeep. He hopped on his one leg to the post while he was being jeered and laughed at. We could hear the people telling him to call for the Americans to help him. The next day, in front of the prison office, we could see the captain of the firing squad using the little American's crutches in a playful manner. To him and the rest of the communist goons, this was a big joke. Like I said before, the murders in La Cabaña Fortress are staged as a show for the spectators who come to taunt and jeer at the victims. I can say that while I was at La Cabaña, I knew and lived with 294 men and boys who were murdered by the communist killers of Fidel Castro. These people, when led to their death, always as they were being tied, would shout in a loud, clear voice, Viva Cuba Libre, Viva Cristo Rey, which means long live Cuba, long live Christ the King. The communist guards, these beasts in human form, could never understand that. They would rave and curse. This was the touch off, one of the most brutal things I have ever witnessed. Right after the Bay of Pigs fiasco, the communists started to release many prisoners, for in the big roundup, many innocent people had been arrested. Fidel Castro knew that he had made a big mistake and was trying to rectify it, but the damage had been done, for all over the island there had been at least 500,000 people arrested. The so-called George Washington of Latin America had finally been unmasked for what he really was. But as fast as they were released, more would come in. As in this big dragnet, they also had taken many members of the underground that had been infiltrated into Cuba before the Bay of Pigs. That is why I say the Donovan ransom deal was an unsavory one at its best, because I can tell you that there are at least 2,000 to 2,500 men that passed through La Cabaña Fortress whom are now on the Isle of Pines, serving on the average of 20 years each. These men are the forgotten ones. Their misfortune was that they did not land on the beach. That is why I say Donovan did not free all the men connected with the invasion. There also are women rotting in Castro's dungeons whose only crime was to be the mothers, wives, sisters, sweethearts of these men. No one talks about these facts. Since I have been released, many words have been written about the Bay of Pigs, but no one talks about these poor souls rotting and suffering in Castro's dungeons. I know you all have read many stories on the Bay of Pigs fiasco. I talked with men who had been infiltrated into Cuba as radio telegraphers and others to organize the uprisings to coincide with the invasion. It has been said that the invasion failed because of lack of air cover and that the invaders had no support from the local population. That is not true. The men who organized the underground told me that they had done their job well and had arms and groups ready to strike in different places on the island, to support the invaders and destroy communications and transport lines. One of the leaders who had been infiltrated into Cuba was a man called Pedro Cuellar, alias Sergei Alonso. This man was a double agent. When Fidel Castro started his infamous roundup of people, the G2, which is equivalent to the Russian secret police, knew where and who to pick up. And that is how many of the leaders of the underground were captured and executed. The same Pedro Cuellar, after he had done his dirty work for the G2, was himself thrown into La Cabaña, where he was almost beaten to death by the men he had turned in. He was rescued from the patio and placed in the Capillas to await trial. This man, to the end, was faithful to his communist masters. He even testified and accused four others at their trial. But as a reward, his communist masters had him shot with the four men he had testified against. One of the radio telegraphers told me that they had lost contact with their base on April the 15th, and as a result, they of the underground never knew that the invaders had hit the beach until it was too late to act. Another one told me he had contact with his base and was told not to do anything. He was to wait, as there was trouble in the United Nations. He desperately pleaded to be able to act, as all around him the G2 was picking up the leaders, but was told to wait. He felt prisoner on April the 18th, a victim of the double agent Pedro Cuellar. This man was one of the four who were executed with him. These men would talk to me as I was the only American in La Cabana Fortress, and there was no way I could answer when they would ask me why had the United States done this to them. My friends, it is hard for me to explain the feeling that would come over me when I heard these terrible things. Since I have been released, I have heard and talked to many of the men of the ill-fated Brigade 2506, and the stories they tell are heartbreaking. Together with these new prisoners came the members of the Catholic youth organizations. The week following the Bay of Pigs fiasco, Fidel Castro, who had attacked the Roman Catholic Church before, really showed his hatred now. The communist goon squads started to arrest priests, monks, nuns, and all who preached the word of God, and to desecrate the house of God. There were 17 priests in La Cabana Fortress at this time. One of them was Father Dario Casado, who slept on the floor beside my bunk. He told me how the communist goons had come into his church, had looted it, placed a television set on the altar to listen to Fidel Castro brag about his defeat of the Yankees at the Bay of Pigs. During his loudmouth speechmaking, they would all get drunk and turn the house of God into a makeshift barroom and dance hall. This was happening all over the island. Going back to the young Catholics who had been arrested by these beast and killers, I will tell you about the most brutal thing I have ever witnessed in La Cabana Fortress. We had no religious services before this. The young Catholics started to say rosary and to hold religious meetings. All the prisoners welcomed this, and regularly in each cell block began the forming of prayer meetings and saying the rosary. Every night at 8 o'clock, the whole prison would be silent and everyone would be standing or kneeling, Catholics and non-Catholics. For this was time for the rosary. When anyone was executed at 10 the following morning, a hush would come over the prison, and a rosary would be said for those who had died the night before. Before long, the communist guards started to shout and curse at them, and there started a series of requises, or so-called searches of the cell blocks. We would be prodded from the cell blocks at 3 or 4 in the morning and made to stand nude in the patio, sometimes for 10 to 14 hours. Their vicious attacks were directed against the young Catholic youths, for they knew who was who, as the communist prison system is so that amongst we prisoners would be communist G2 men who had been infiltrated in with us to report on everything that was said or done. I have seen men kicked and bayoneted for not moving fast enough. They took all of our personal belongings. No religious relics were allowed. The prisoners were ordered that there would be no more prayers or religious meetings, but this did not stop the young Catholics. I will say that before I had been in La Cabana, I, like so many others, had taken my religion for granted. I would like to say here that the faith and courage of these young Catholics made me feel humble and ashamed. Though I was born and reared a Catholic, I found out that all these years I really had taken God for granted. But my friends, I can say with all my heart and soul that we cannot take God for granted, as I have seen young boys go to their death with such faith in our Lord Jesus Christ that words cannot express how I feel. I would like to read for you the farewell letter of a young Catholic youth written the night before he died. La Cabana Fortress, April 17th, 1961. Dear Mom and Dad, I received just a few minutes ago the ratification of my death sentence, and that is why now, during my final moments, I am writing you these few lines. You won't believe me, but I can assure you that never before have I had such spiritual tranquility as the one I have now. I am sincerely very glad, because I have the feeling that within the next few hours I will be with God, waiting and praying for all of you. Today at the trial, I saw my brothers and godparents crying. And why should they? No, and 1,000 times no. I know what happened today. I know what happened today is very sad for you. But I want you to overcome it and to think that God, in his infinite kindness, has conceded me the grace of squaring my accounts with him. And we all should be grateful for this privilege. Goodbye, dear old folks. Never lose your faith in our eternal life, and be assured that I will intercede for all of you. Long live Christ the King. Kisses, hugs, but no tears to all. Goodbye, brothers, godparents, and family. Have faith in God, Alberto. My friends, you have just heard me describe to you the things I saw and lived in La Cabaña Fortress. I am going to all ask of you listeners to remember, every night in La Cabaña Fortress and in all the other dungeons in Cuba, at 8 o'clock, the suffering victims of the communist antichrist animals are saying a rosary. Everyone is standing at attention, the Catholics and non-Catholics, or no matter what religion they follow. No matter where you are, home watching television or out riding in a car or whatever you are doing. Stop. Think of the poor souls in Castro's dungeons. Bow your head. Pray for the suffering souls to be freed from their suffering and misery. The communist antichrist and human beast that have sworn to destroy our freedoms are the ones that our State Department tells us we can live with in one world. They preach coexistence. There can never be such a thing, because we can never exist side by side with the Antichrist killers, who in their own leader's words said, "We will bury you." Let our battle cry be, "Long live the United States of America, long live freedom, long live Christ the King."